Now we've reached episode 34, and it's time to talk about science. The 18th century is the period of enlightenment. Historians have, however, discussed if one can talk of an enlightenment in Sweden. There was no political ideology connected to the new ideas, and there were no split between science and religion. People, also scientists, were still as religious as ever, though the orthodoxy slowly faded away. In fact, new scientific knowledge was seen as proof of the wonders of the world and of God's existence. That all was so cleverly ordered, both on earth and in heaven, surely proved the existence of God. God had also provided man with an intellect and an ability for logical reasoning, a gift that must be used to good effect. Some changes happened in religion too. In the early 18th century, a new piety emphasizing the personal relation to God spread. Initially, it was seen as a threat to the established church, and a new law from 1726 made all religious meetings outside church illegal. But still, the new way of looking at God influenced the church too, and by 1780 was formulated the well-known children's prayer, Gud som haver barn en kär, or in English, God who loves the children dear, look after little me. Wherever in the world I wander, my happiness is in God's hands. Happiness comes, happiness goes. Those who love God, happiness have. Earlier children's prayers had been much more strict, encouraging the child to behave according to God's will. So this new outlook with a personal, loving God really was something new. But what Sweden did experience, whether we call it enlightenment or not, was a new and strong interest in science, and first and foremost in empirical research in things that was considered good or useful for society. Natural science, economics, statistics became important matters, as well as analysis of the current and partly new and more critical view on history. Usefulness was the key word, and since it's easier to detect usefulness in economics or chemistry than in history or languages, the first boom came in the former subjects. But later in the 18th century, there was also an enlarged interest in humanities. And now, for once, Sweden not only follows in the steps of other nations, but actually produces new knowledge through scientists as Carl von Linné, Anders Celsius, Christopher Polhem, Per Wargentin, and Jöns Jakob Scheel. Sweden thus managed to provide an environment where science could flourish, in spite of a small population, relative poverty, and a position in the periphery. I will get back to some of these men and the findings soon. But first, let us note that the emergence of first-rate scientists was not, at least not at first, thanks to the universities. They were by now four, Uppsala, Lund, Åbo, and Greifswald, with altogether perhaps 2,000 students. The universities were still stuck in old habits. They are, after all, for good and bad, rather conservative institutions, focusing on theology, Latin, Greek, etc. In the 1720s, Anders Celsius in vain proposed that Uppsala University should change the professorate in Latin poetry for one in natural science. The change came anyway. In the 1740s, Parliament decided that the university should teach economics, and the university changed to institutions more focused on educating for usefulness. Uppsala, for example, employed professors in chemistry, in physics, in medicine, in biology, and organized education for civil servants. It was even suggested by government that the universities should completely lay off research and instead focus only on education. But this idea fell due to strong opposition from, among others, Linné, who rightly pointed out the value of research-based education. Anyway, the universities changed during the 18th century. They were still only for a very small segment of the population, but they became broader in subject and in outlook. It is also, I think, important here to point out that Sweden had an unusually high level of literacy. Priests had long been charged to teach parishioners the basics of reading and writing. In the 1768, they were also charged with reporting on how basic education was organized in the parishes. It turned out that there actually were a number of teachers employed in parishes. although this was not demanded, an education meant to be provided by the priest himself or by the clerk. By the end of the 18th century, it is estimated that around 80% of the population could read and that 50% could write. The ability to read and write was of varied quality, reaching from a perfect ability to do both to just being able to struggle through simple texts and writing one's name. But still, this is an internationally very high rate of literacy. And that's always a good thing for society. It certainly doesn't mean that anyone had the opportunity to become a scientist, but it meant that more people could access knowledge and that they got more of a confidence. Anyway, universities were not that keen on science to start with, but there were other institutions as parallel arenas for discussions. The Royal Academies had foreign models, like the Royal Society in London or the Académie Française in Paris. Most of them had royal patronage, Queen Lovisa Ulrika and her son, King Gustav III, being particularly keen on founding Swedish royal societies. The first of the Swedish academies was the Royal Academy of Science, founded in 1739 with members as Linné, Celsius and Wargentin. There, as in other academies, members gathered to discuss new knowledge and how it could be put into good use in society. There were always connections with other societies in other countries, science being international in its nature. Another important task for the Royal Academy of Science was to spread knowledge to the rest of society, much the same task as universities have today. This was done partly by the publishing of texts printed in Swedish so that they could be read by a larger audience than if they had been produced in Latin, the traditional language of science. Some articles were also translated into foreign languages to facilitate the spread abroad, but the Swedish public was seen as the main recipient of the new findings. The today most well-known academy, the Swedish Academy, was founded by Gustav III in 1786. Its aim was to guard and develop Swedish language and literature, a more humanistic approach than the Academy of Science had. But history, poetry, rhetoric, and knowledge of the antiquities was also seen as important and useful for society. New works on Swedish history had, for example, been produced during the 18th century. Still not what we would regard proper scientific history, but with more emphasis on finding the truth and securing accuracy by referring to empirical sources. Gustav III said that writing true history demands knowledge and courage. Writing useful and tasteful history also demands wit and reason. Today, the Swedish Academy is known for deciding who should get the Nobel Prize in Literature, but that, of course, is a much later task. The Royal Academy of Science decides on the Nobel Prizes in chemistry and physics, and both academies still see the spread of knowledge to the public as an important task. To see what was new, what the new interest in science achieved, we will have to look at some of the Swedish scientists active during the 18th century. First, we have Anders Celsius, astronomer educated at Uppsala University. He was born in an academic family. His father, too, was an astronomer and a mathematician in 1701. He was instrumental in building the first Swedish astronomy observatory in Uppsala and part of international expeditions to measure Earth. His most famous effort is, however, not in astronomy, but in the Celsius temperature scale, still used in many countries and, of course, named after Anders Celsius. Per Wargentin was the son of a priest in Jämtland in mid-Sweden. He was also an astronomer who made most of his today well-known work outside that discipline. Wargentin is seen as the father of statistics, founding the predecessor of today's Statistics Sweden. So thus, Wargentin was the man who first initiated the population count in 1749, the one that was such a disappointment because of the surprisingly small population. Counts were kept up, and Wargentin gathered material and made statistical analyses of the population's average lifespan, age structure, division between men and women, etc., but the kind of things that Statistic Sweden still do today. The most famous Swedish scientist of the age, and I would say of all ages, was Carl von Linné. He too was the son of a priest in Småland and born in 1707. He was meant to be a priest too, like his father, but already in childhood he was much more interested in flowers and encouraged in his interest by his teachers. After studies in Lund and Uppsala, he became a professor in medicine and later in botany at Uppsala University. Linné traveled widely, carefully observing and noting not only growing things, but also antiquities, customs, food, etc. Most of his travels were within Sweden, to Laponia in 1732, mid-Sweden 1733-34, Öland and Gotland in 1741, Västergötland in 1746, and Scania in 1749. But he also visited the Netherlands, and he corresponded widely with international scholars and was a member of the Royal Academy of London. His students travelled farther away. Daniel Solander went with Cook on his expedition to the Pacific in 1768. Per Kalm travelled in North America in 1748-51. Fredrik Hasselquist went to Palestine, and Peter Forsskål to Yemen, where he died. And by the way, there's an absolutely lovely book on the last expedition to Yemen. This was really a Danish expedition, science, as I said, being international. And the book is written by Danish author Torkild Hansen. In English translation, it is named Arabia Felix, the Danish expedition of 1761-1767. Read it. It is one of the best books I've ever read. All these disciples sent home letters, descriptions, and samples of plants, animals, and minerals to Linné at home in Uppsala. The main legacy from Linné is his writings on systematizing nature, grouping and naming plants and animals in a systematic way. All things categorized with a generic name and a specific epithet in Latin. Domestic dogs thus becoming canis familiaris, canis being the larger group of animals, also containing wolves, canis lupus, and foxes, canis vulpes. The taxonomy then is still in use, as you can see, for animals and plants even today, and for humans, as in Homo sapiens. And that was somewhat controversial at the time. Linné researched humans in the same way as other animals, thus placing them among the animals, not above them, as the Bible did. Still, Linné didn't oppose religion. He didn't, like Darwin, elaborate on the development of humans from other varieties of homos, the larger group. But he did see humanity as part of the world. And as mentioned, he was a religious man who did not see any opposition between science and religion. Linné was world famous already in his lifetime, really after 1735, when his Systema Naturae was published. And fame didn't die with him in 1778. Linné's work is still read. His taxonomy is, as I said, still used for plants and animals, and there are numerous statues, stamps, and other forms of commemorations honoring him. His birthplace in Småland, Gåshult, is open to public, as is his estate Hammarby outside Uppsala and his gardens within the Uppsala University. There were many more scientists, writers, and philosophers in Sweden during this period, but Linné, Wargentin, and Celsius will serve as examples. And in science, we must say that things did happen in the 18th century. Sure, further developments were made later, but the new worldview, as well as some of the findings made during this period, were truly important both then and now. In the next episode, we'll turn to political history again, and to the reign of Gustav III. But since he too was interested not only in science, but also in art and architecture, we'll also somewhat continue to broaden the view on the development in the 18th century. They were not only people interested in categorizing and counting things, but also in making the world more beautiful.